Hey guys, and welcome back to episode 6 of Underrated, a podcast where we look at films we believe are underrated, generally disliked, or simply forgotten. I'm your host, Gabriel Green, and with me is my co-host, James Hamrick. What's up, James?
Nothing much. I just finished watching this movie, so I am ready to talk about it.
Okay, yeah. Well, we missed last week, had some difficulty scheduling, and it felt weird not having something to edit, but it was nice having a break. So what were you up to last week?
I was trying to get a lot of homework done, and then I was actually at my parents', and I didn't have my laptop down there, and then I was able to get access to a laptop, but then I was like, well, I don't have my headset with me, so it just nothing ended up lining up right between the two of us.
But yeah, so before we get into the show, I'd like to ask you, if you enjoy this this podcast, if you could subscribe and rate and review us on iTunes. It would really help people to find us. And also just give us a like on Facebook. All of that really helps us get out on the internet. All right, this week we'll be reviewing I, Robot by director Alice Proya. But before we get into that, have you seen any cool movies lately?
Yeah, so I ended up seeing two movies within the past 2 weeks. One of them was Final Fantasy XV Kingsglaive. It's the tie-in movie to the game, which is coming out in a couple months. And it is getting torn up critically, but then you look at it, and one of the reviews just said it feels like an overly long cutscene, or, you know, if you're unfamiliar to the genre, you have no idea what's going on. Other things, it doesn't feel like a whole movie. And to all that, I'm like, one, it really should feel like an overly long cutscene, because it's just tying in with the game full of cutscenes.
Is that the one with the really big cast? Of, like, really famous people?
With Aaron Paul and Sean Bean and Lena Headey? Is it Headey?
I think it's Headey.
Okay. But, yeah, it had a great cast. Well, there were a couple of the people that you could tell weren't, like, Hollywood tier. But, for the most part, it was actually really well acted.
Is that, like, motion capture or animated?
I'm not sure if it's motion capture or not. I think it is. Like, they didn't use the likeness of any of the actors, but can't be sure if it was in terms of their movement, if it was motion capture.
Okay.
But this movie, in terms of visuals, was one of the coolest movies I'd ever seen. Like, it's the best animation I think I've ever seen in the movie. And then in terms of action, like, live action or animated, it has some of the best action scenes I've seen.
Really?
It's just really cool. The camera work is really creative. The action scenes, the way they, like, the scope of it is really, really, like, epic. They use a lot of really cool wide shots. It's just filmed in, like, in a way that I haven't seen a lot of animated films be shot. And so it was really cool. And whenever they say it doesn't really, like, stand on its own very well, the purpose of this movie was to try to essentially get people excited for the game and to set up the universe before the game comes out so that you're familiar with it whenever you start it up. And so with that in mind, like, I think it absolutely did its job. I'm ready for the game to come out. I think the world is really cool. The cast was great. Like, I enjoyed it.
Okay.
And the other thing, the other movie I saw was Midnight Special. My thoughts on this was essentially the exact same thing as they were with Take Shelter, except maybe to a little more degree, because in terms of directing, like, it was very well made. Like, it had a lot of really cool shots. Michael Shannon, as usual, is really, really good. And then Joel Edgerton is actually really good in this as well. And Kirsten Dunst is in it. And this is the first movie I've seen her in a while.
Since Spider-Man?
Yeah, since, honestly, it's probably true for me. Yeah. Adam Driver is in it. As a CIA analyst, or I think he works for the FBI. And he's really good. He's my favorite character, and he's really likable. But then I'm watching it, and so there's a moment in the movie, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a moment in the movie where the kid kind of reveals what he is, like, what's going on, and it's incredibly vague. And Kirsten Dunst, who plays his mom, just says, "I think I understand now." And I just wanted to say, I'm glad you do, because I don't. Like, please explain to me what you somehow understand. And then the ending happens, and it's over. And it was me and my brother and a couple of friends. And the first thing he said is like, all right, somebody start explaining. Because none of us had any idea what had just happened, what any of it was meant to mean. It was, I don't know. So Jeff Nichols writes and directs all of his movies, and I'm a big fan of Jeff Nichols, the director, because his directing style is really, really good. But I have issues with Jeff Nichols, the writer, because it honestly felt like it was a filmed version of the first draft, where mm-hmm. he had his ideas. He said, I want this person to get to this place. This person is this. I'll work out the details later. But then they never ended up working out the details and filmed anyways, is at least what it felt like for me.
Yeah, I get that feeling with a lot of movies nowadays. Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I really should check it out. All right, well, I also saw a couple of movies. First one was Maverick, Richard Donner's 1994 Western with Mel Gibson and Jodie Foster. I thought it was fine. It just didn't seem to know what it was trying to be as a film. Just it was mostly a comedy, but it would get really goofy and slapstick sometimes, and it would get kind of dark almost all of a sudden, and it just felt really inconsistent. And the story doesn't make much sense. But Mel Gibson's always really, really fun to watch, and it's a really likable film. I don't know. Have you seen like the Shanghai Noon or Shanghai Nights film?
Yeah, I've actually seen Maverick as well.
Okay.
It was just a long time ago. I think my complaint with that one is almost is what you're saying, which is kind of my complaint about his Superman movies, where tonally it's just kind of inconsistent, where sometimes it wants to be really silly and almost Three Stooges-esque.
Uh-huh.
And then other times it's like, no, this is serious. And it's like, okay, well, if you're going to do this, I can't really take you seriously. But then if you want to be funny, then stop being so, I don't know.
Yeah, the whole little episode in the middle with the Indians was like out of a totally different film. And so I think that really spoiled the film for me. But it's not bad. It's fine. And I also saw Pleasantville, which is directed by Gary Ross. And I also wasn't terribly impressed with that film either. I think it has a really good concept. And the first half of the film, it takes its concept of two teenagers being sent back into a 50s sitcom. It does a lot of really fun stuff with it, but it also didn't seem to have any idea how to end its story. And so it starts off really strong, but the last half is really slow and kind of boring at times. And I think it's really muddled as far as what kind of message it's trying to say. Have you seen that one?
I actually haven't seen it, but it's one, like, I think the premise sounds really cool, so it's one that I wanted to watch, but I've just kind of never gotten around to.
Yeah, it's not terrible. It has a really cool cast, even has an older Don Knotts in a kind of a cameo, halfway important scene role. I think the entire cast is really good. They act like they're from 90s sitcoms. You got William H. Macy and Joan Allen and Jeff Daniels. They're all really great, and so is Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon. It just feels off where it ends. And they also finally got around to seeing Reservoir Dogs, and I really enjoyed it. It's kind of weird because I've seen all the post-Kill Bill Tarantino films and haven't seen any previous ones, so it felt weird seeing a Tarantino flick that wasn't nearly as well-polished as his later films. But I think the editing and the script are really good, even though the direction is a little wonky at times. But it's really fun. It's a really cool little contained film. To me, it feels like The Hateful Eight is basically this film perfected. I think that's my favorite Tarantino film. It's a really impressive directional debut.
Yeah, there were a couple years ago, I started the movie, and I only got about 20 minutes in. I can't remember why I didn't finish it. But I remember thinking, like, I'm a big fan of like really cool opening title cards. I think it's a cool way to set the tone. And it started, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna like this, and that's literally all of the memory I have of that movie. I cannot remember why I didn't continue it or what happened, but I need to go back and watch it because I wanna watch all of his films and then try to decide for myself.
Yeah, it's a really well made up non-linear structure. Yeah, I want to go check out Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown next, and then I'll finally have seen all his movies. I'm kind of off and on about him. I really, really love The Hateful Eight and Kill Bill. think Django Unchained's pretty good for the most part, and I really, really despise Inglourious Basterds, so I am looking forward to seeing what those films have.
I've only seen Django and The Hateful Eight. I feel like it's weird to call myself like a film buff and not have seen stuff like Pulp Fiction, so I really need to fix that. But I really, really liked Django up until the last 15 minutes. Like, after, I mean, I'm going to go ahead, spoiler warning for anybody who hasn't seen it, even though it's kind of older. After Christoph Waltz's character died, I just kind of checked out.
Yeah.
I didn't care nearly as much. But then I really, really liked The Hateful Eight. I thought it was really well done. It had just a lot of cool twists that I didn't expect, and my favorite performance from Tim Roth ever.
Yeah, he's excellent in that. Yeah, that film is, I'm still not sure if I actually like how it ends, just because it's so dark and gross.
Yeah.
But it is such an incredible journey, and some of the best dialogue, I think, of all time. All right, let's move into our main review of iRobot.
We designed them to be trusted with our homes, with our way of life, with our world. But did we design them to be trusted?
The rollout of USR's new generation of robot, the NS5, was marred by the death of designer Alfred Lanning.
Identify. Murder's a new trick for a robot. Respond.
He don't murder him!
We're gonna miss the good old days.
What good old days?
When people were killed by other people.
My robots don't kill people.
That thing threw somebody out of a window. Is that registering with you?
A robot cannot harm a human being.
And you trust them if you want to.
We look to robots for protection. Imagine the loss of all that we've gained because of an irrational paranoia.
Does thinking you're the last sane man on the face of the earth make you crazy? Because if it does, maybe I am.
Maybe you can be looking in the shadows all the time.
On the inside, help me find out what is wrong with these robots.
Dr. Lanning suggested robots might naturally evolve.
I was hoping to see you again, Detective. Think of me as your friend.
Why didn't you just hand the world over on a silver platter?
Maybe we did.
We're on the eve of the largest robotic distribution in history. There'll be one robot to every 5 humans.
How many robots have ever committed a crime? How many robots in the world?
None.
There is no conspiracy. What this is one mistake.
Oh, hell no.
Somehow, I told you so just doesn't quite say it.
Get off my car!
iRobot was directed by Alex Proyas and released in 2004 on a budget of $120 million. It grossed about $347 million, so it was a modest hit. wasn't huge. And it starred Will Smith, Bridget Moynihan, Alan Tudyk, Bruce Greenwood, and James Cromwell. So I've been a fan of this film for quite a while, but this is your first time seeing it. What'd you think of it?
So I actually really liked it. I was worried, since this is the first time we chose a movie that I hadn't seen. I was like, man, what if I watch this and I end up being one of the people who disliked it? But I ended up liking it a lot. I mean, I don't think it's like a masterpiece, but it's, there have been a lot worse action movies that have been better received, I think. And this is like, I mean, at the end of the day, this is an action movie, but it is different. Like, it does a lot of different things than other movies. And I don't know. I don't really see why people wouldn't at least enjoy watching it.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really fun action film. It's been a favorite of mine for a while, and it's, I think, Will Smith at his blockbuster best, in my opinion. He gets a lot of really awesome quips and even a couple really emotional scenes.
I'm a big fan of Will Smith, actually. Whenever he did the first Men in Black, like, that's my favorite like action comedy movie of all time.
Okay.
Ever since then, I've pretty much liked him in everything he's done. I think he's He's one of the actors who can really nail like comedic timing, but also is just a really great emotional actor. Like, he can do drama and comedy, and he can do both in one movie, and it all really works.
Yeah, he's so likable in every role he's in that when he does have these really awesome dramatic scenes, that they always surprise me, even though they shouldn't, because I know how good he is. Have you seen any other Alex Proyas films, or Proyas, I think? I'm going to mispronounce that multiple times, I'm sorry.
I think the only other one I've actually seen was The Crow, and it's been so long since I've seen that, there wouldn't really be a lot for me to say about it. I think I remember enjoying it, but I don't really remember a lot of the details.
Yeah, I'm kind of iffy on him. I think The Crow and Dark City both have a lot of really cool ideas and atmosphere, but I don't think they execute the story very well at all. And The Dark City has one of the worst performances I've ever seen from Kiefer Sutherland. It's like, you know, the cliche German scientist you see in all these films.
Did they cast him as that?
Well, he's not German, but he's every other cliche of a nerdy scientist you can ever imagine, amped to like 10. It is so, so bad.
That almost makes it sound like it's worth watching for it, though.
Yeah, but he's in a different film than the rest of the movie. I think that's generally his best reviewed film. A lot of people really, really love it, but I think it's just so hokey. I couldn't take it seriously. And then I like this film, and his next film, Knowing, which stars Nicolas Cage. I also really enjoyed that one. Not many people did, but I think the first three quarters are really great looking and a well paced out mystery. I think the ending feels a little off, but I enjoy it. And then Gods of Egypt was his latest film, and I have no idea what happened with that one. It's insane. It's visually interesting. I can't even say it's great visually because some of the effects are so bad. But you saw like all the crazy 360 moves he did in this one. There's a lot of that in that, and then there's just a whole bunch of insane stuff like Jeffrey Rush on a ship in the sky fighting off giant space worms with some kind of laser blaster.
Not going to lie, you're making this movie sound a lot more enticing.
I think everyone in the world should see it just once, just to experience it, but it's not a good movie. So, this movie is based off the classic sci-fi novel. I think it might be an anthology by Isaac Asimov. Have you read any of Asimov's works?
I haven't. I did do like a little bit of research before I watched the movie, just on what it was based on. And yeah, I think it was like a collection of different short stories, I believe. And that's, I think the movie just kind of gets a lot of its details from that, but it seemed very loosely based.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's about like as based on as say, as like World War Z is on its book.
Huh.
Yeah. I haven't read anything from Asimov. He's supposedly like one of the fathers of modern sci-fi. So I really should check out some of his books. So what are some of the things you liked about this movie?
I really like, well, one, we talked about it a lot, a little bit already. I really like Will Smith. And the cast in general, I think, is really good. James Cromwell just seems like he's kind of born to play this, like, old scientist. I don't know why, but for whatever reason, the first, like, whenever he first shows up on screen and you see his hologram, I'm like, that makes sense. He doesn't have a whole lot to do in the movie, but, you know, he's always good.
Yeah, he has a really great presence, considering he's not actually in any of the film proper. He still feels like a really integral character, despite the fact that he's hardly there.
Bruce Greenwood is good. Again, he's not really in it a whole lot, but I actually really like him as an actor. I think he's underused.
Yeah, he's good.
But I think the scenes that he's given, he does really well in. And I was waiting to see Alan Tudyk until about halfway through. I realized, I was like, oh, wait, no, he's the robot. Because I love Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Firefly. Everything after that, I've liked him in. And I think he gave like a lot of humanity to Sonny. I really like that character a lot.
Yeah. He's actually in a lot more movies than you would think. He does a lot of voice work. But he's always so good. Yeah, I think he injects a lot of humanity and subtlety into the character, even though it is mocap, and they modulate his voice a little bit, but he's really good in it. What really impressed me with this film is just how well the story is told. Like the opening scene, for example, they have him wake up from a nightmare and he's also holding a gun. So that kind of tells us both that he's haunted by his past and he's really paranoid. And that's just like wordlessly in the opening scene. And I think the general visual storytelling throughout is really strong.
Yeah. I think like there really isn't a whole lot of like exposition given to the audience to explain, like, at least audibly, to explain to the audience like what's happened. It's all done visually. Like, you kind of get the idea. You're told what society looks like now just by the visuals. Like, you see all the robots and what they're doing. Like, when the robot was walking the dog, like, there's a lot you can take from that. Like, okay, so I guess, you know, they're working for humans now. This one guy was giving her purse. But, like, we're never, you know, like, there's never that one scene. I hate it in movies where they'll sit down and everybody is familiar with society and the way it works. But for the sake of the audience, there's that one character who's like, in blah, 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 and the year blah, 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 we designed these robots to do this. And ever since that, you know, and then it's like, if this weren't a movie and you didn't have an audience, no character would really say that.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's like you said, it's like kind of all visually given to the audience in a way that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can tell he put a lot of thought just into how these scenes were laid out so like you said, show, don't tell, which is like the oldest screenwriting rule that no one listens to anymore. And also, I think just general visually, it's a really, really slick looking film. And I think I really like how he uses the camera. And I think the vision of the future actually looks like something that could happen if we create viable robots. It's like just barely futuristic, but there's so much just that's carried over from our existing world that it doesn't feel crazy like so many futures do.
Yeah. And like, I mean, obviously, like the CGI and like comparison to today's movies, you know, you can see that it's an older film, but just, I like the visual art style of the movie. Like, the movie just has a really cool aesthetic. Like, when he parks his car and it goes into that huge garage, like, the way all the, like, the sleek design on all the doors, and the wheels on the tires, everything about it, like, it had a really cool art direction, I think.
Yeah, and I really love those future cars. Not sure how the circular wheels work, or the spherical wheels work, but they're really cool. Like the stuff they did with the cars and some of the chase scenes, which we'll get to later, but I want one of those.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
I actually think the CGI, for how much CGI is in this film and being made in 2004, I think it holds up really well. There are a couple scenes where the green screen is pretty bad, but overall, I think just the way he uses it, it works mostly.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is kind of to do with what you were saying, where it's they retain like a lot of stuff from society that's in there now, like just the way things look, instead of just going full blown, like let's just do CGI buildings and CGI this and that. Like it's a blend of like CGI with kind of the world today. And I don't know, I think it works for the most part.
Yeah, and it's CGI where it needs to be CGI. Like I never noticed like a CGI double for Smith in any of the stunts. It looked like he did all of his own stunts or an actual stunt person. It looks like there's always a human being where they should be. And so I think that really helped, even though the robots are obviously mocap and a lot of the sets are probably CGI. But I think the integration is a lot better than it's done often.
I actually like the designs of the robots just themselves. Like I think they're pretty cool looking. Alan Tudyk, he did do the motion capture for Sonny. And there's like just a lot of expression, like a lot of actual emotion you're able to see in the robot. And then like whenever they glow red and they act in unison, they're actually very threatening. Like as an army, it's, you know, I know like right now a lot of the criticisms in huge action movies is that the heroes end up just fighting like kind of an endless stream of CGI things, but that's not really my criticism of a lot of movies. I mean, I get why it bothers people, but
it's only bad if it doesn't look cool.
Yeah, like if it looks cool, you know, I mean, at the end of the Avengers when they fought the Chitauri, I thought that was cool. I was like, I don't care that they all look the same, they look cool. And so in this one, I think the fact that they were all just like the same looking and they acted in that kind of unison, like they were all programmed to do something. I don't know. I thought it made some really cool fight scenes.
Yeah, I think, I gotta praise Proyas's camera work again, because it is, especially that last fight scene up on the platforms, like the 360 shots going over and under as he's running. I have no idea how they got those, because I think they look smoother than even like the Matrix 360 shots, which is kind of famous for them. Yeah, they're really fun and exciting, just how that scene is staged and shot.
Yeah, I think one of the things he did was where, you know, even if they did use a CGI double for Will Smith in that scene, you don't really show it, like, because he's in the middle of a fight, like, he's almost obscured when it just starts spinning around, and so you're never really able to get a good look at him, but you still, like, know what's going on and you know what he's doing, so that whenever it comes back and it focuses on him, there was never really that jarring transition. Like, in The Matrix, it's, like, very in your face whenever they use shots like that, so anytime there's CGI, it's, like, instantly noticeable.
Yeah, I think he's a really, really good action director. Just when to cut and when to go wide, and just how they're edited is really strong. And I think the script is also very good. Yeah, the screenplay is by Jeff Vintar and Avika Goldsman. I think I've heard of the second one, but I'm not terribly familiar with them. But yeah, I think just in how it takes the time in the first act to really set up these characters and let us get to know them, and just slowly teasing out the mystery. It's never boring, but it's always just intriguing trying to know what's going on. And even though, you know, obviously the robots are gonna go crazy in the end, I think the way they use James Cromwell through his various holograms and whatnot, I think is really interesting, and it's always intriguing and well-paced in the first and second acts.
Yeah, and I mean, it was definitely like, I mean, everybody knew that there was going to be the robot revolution in the end, but I think not making Bruce Greenwood the actual villain was a really smart decision. Like,
mm-hmm.
At the very end, when you're expecting, because I mean, I don't know, maybe other people did see it coming. At that point, I was like, well, here comes the scene where they're going to, like, he's going to give us his reason or whatever. And then when he was dead, I was like, oh, okay. And then it turns out it was Vicky the whole time. I just thought that was a really cool twist where the head of the evil corporation actually wasn't the bad guy, and he was a prisoner of the actual villain, who was the robot.
Yeah, it's an effective fake-out that actually makes sense in the context of the story. Speaking of fake-outs, I really thought that the scene in the beginning where he goes to Dr. Lanning's suicide, it was a really cool shot where at first it looks like Bruce Green was standing there, and then it just kind of goes around him, shows us a hologram, and then reveals his dead body. It's just shots like that he didn't have to plan that thing out, but it just looks cool, I think.
Yeah, I remember when I first watched it, I was like, oh, that's I didn't see that coming. I didn't think that they were going to kill James Cromwell off, like, well, actually, like, before the movie even starts, really. But that was a really cool reveal, the way he did it with the camera.
This film isn't terribly deep, but I do like some of the questions it asks, just of AI and humanity and whatnot. I mean, again, it's not terribly deep, but personally, I almost prefer when films ask questions but don't try to answer them. Because I think when you actually answer a question, generally, it's pretty boring, in my opinion. But when a film asks the question, it leaves me to actually think about it afterwards.
Yeah. And I find, like, a lot of the times whenever a movie asks questions and then, like, gives explicit answers to them, it comes off as very, like, I don't know, preachy with that specific message, where it's like, I would much rather just be presented, like, two sides, or just, like, this kind of, like, a moralistic question, and then be like, what do you think of this? Or, I don't know, I think it produces more discussion, if anything, I think. Whereas if the movie just says this, there's not really a lot to talk about. Where if it just says, you know, here's something to talk about, here's an idea, the audience is left with a lot more to think about, I think.
Yeah, right, Interstellar?
I love Interstellar, and I will defend that movie.
I like the first three quarters, but it should have stopped when it was ahead.
I love the ending.
Yeah, like thematically, I really like that scene where it's juxtaposing between Sonny's... Oh yeah, and we are going to spoil everything from now on, in case you haven't seen the film. I don't think we've spoiled anything much yet, but I'm going to spoil the rest of it afterwards. So, the scene where you have Sonny's execution and Will Smith is going to investigate the dumps, and you have Dr. Lanning's monologue about robots and AI in the background, I think it's a really powerful scene.
Yeah, like the use of having his voice over what's happening is done really well. And then I like the repetition. Like that line was kind of a central theme, because I believe the movie opened with him saying that, didn't it?
It opens with text of the three laws.
Oh, that's right, that's right. There were a lot of scenes that took themselves really seriously in a good way, where I think it was enough to kind of set it apart from other action movies, because other action movies are just like, oh, this is just fun, dumb movie. Whereas this one was a fun action movie, but I don't know, it actually had, like you said, even though it doesn't get too deep, it actually has something to say.
Yeah, it took the time to be smarter than it had to be. It didn't have to go there, and it still would have been fun, but it does take the time to ask a couple questions. Another scene I want to highlight is the chase scene with the two trucks full of robots. I love his line, "There is no way my luck is that bad."
Yeah. See, that was a really cool chase scene. I'm not sure why they were the only vehicles in there. Maybe it was just like a late night. But I'm glad there weren't any other vehicles in there, just because that was such a cool chase scene.
Yeah.
Even though the CGI is a little bit dated at this point, I didn't even notice at that point, just because of it was just a really cool, engaging action scene. Watching all the robots jump on the car, and then as he just spins and does the constant twist and he's still staying on the road, it was just a really well shot scene.
Yeah, it's just well paced, exciting, and gripping. And then I like how it ends with the reveal of his robot arm. That's just a really cool, it comes out of nowhere. But it makes sense in terms of the film you've seen, and then it also plays back into his character. But it surprises you, but it's really, really exciting reveal, I think.
I like it whenever he's looking at his arm and you think we're about to transition to another scene, and then the car gets thrown at him.
Oh yeah.
And it kind of continues. It was just a all around, it was a scene where the action is well done, but we're still given something. Like, it serves a story purpose as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's another 360 shot there where the robot hooks him under his arms and just swings around a couple times. Normally, I get really annoyed and distracted when you have kind of the really cool camera work, but something about that scene is dizzying in how effective it is at portraying the spinning.
Yeah, you kind of feel like you're... it seemed like the camera was just fixed to Will Smith's position, so that you were almost being spun around with them like the camera was.
I think it was going the opposite way of the spinning, counterclockwise to the spinning. I'm not sure what it was, but it makes you want to kind of move your head to go along with it to keep from getting dizzy.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it served its purpose in that it was kind of not disorienting, but you couldn't really tell what was going on, which I don't really think is a bad thing. I think it works, because I think that was what it was going for.
Mm-hmm. I really like the work they put into how the robots move and act during the world. It felt very robotic, I guess. But and I think that comes out really well in the fight scenes where Sonny is going to get the nanites and he fights a couple robots on the way. There's some really interesting choreography in how they move and fight each other. I always really like that scene, just how he fights the other ones, and I don't know why. It reminds me of The Matrix. I'm not sure why. I just think there's a lot of creativity in the choreography there.
Yeah, I especially like the hallway scene where he's running down and he jumps up and spins and the camera stops and slows down. And he kind of almost barrels through the first one and then he sticks the landing and instantly starts going into a fight scene with the other one. It was just really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of spider insect-like in a way, because they're using using all four of their limbs together in this really perfect fluid motion. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. I also just like the way whenever they fight, you can tell that they're fighting in the most efficient way.
Yeah.
Like all their motions are really quick. They're using all of their extremities. It was just a really cool fight scene, I think.
A couple more of the cast I want to highlight before we move on. Bridget Moynihan, I think she's mostly good. There are a couple scenes where she seems like she's on the verge of tears for no real reason. I'm not sure. Did you notice that?
I did notice that, so I'm glad that you mentioned that. There were some scenes where, and some of the times it did mix it. Like, I get why she was trying to convey the emotion. Yeah. Like, whenever she was like about to have to deactivate Sunny. And then maybe this isn't even a criticism of her acting. Maybe that's just what she looks like when she cries. But sometimes just her facial expression just kind of seemed weird during the more emotional scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to criticize her because I think she has a really cool dynamic with Will Smith. I think they work really well together and they have a lot of fun dialogue. But it was just felt weird in some scenes. I'm not sure what it was.
For whatever reason, I think her least strong scene, for me at least, is her introductory scene. It seemed almost more like an exaggerated version of the character that's in the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But
that, I may need to go back and watch it. Maybe it's more consistent than I thought, but maybe I just got used to it. But it seemed almost like a caricature of the kind of like, oh, I believe in what we do as a company kind of character.
Yeah, they really try to hammer her character type in pretty hard, and I think it goes a little over the top sometimes. But I do like, as I said, the dynamic between her and Will Smith. I think there's some really funny quips in there. I would quote them, but I'm a very, very, very bad Will Smith impression, so I'm going to spare you that. I enjoyed that the police chief wasn't the cliche screamy guy you see in so many other films. Yeah, I think he and Smith got along really well. It reminded me in a weird way of the dynamic between Lawrence Fishburne and Amy Adams from Man of Steel. Just the how they got along and how he obviously cared for Smith's character.
Yeah, it's funny that you make the connection because actually I thought of the same connection myself. And that, like, I don't know, it's one of those characters where, like, that you need the character, you need the person in authority to be against, like, the protagonist and, like, what he's doing. But I think in a lot of movies, whenever they take that character, they make you, the audience, like, try to dislike them.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, like, he wasn't really in the wrong, you know? He had every reason to think the things he was thinking and to say what he was saying. There was really no reason to try to get the audience to dislike him. So I just think he was a well-done character that, like you said, wasn't one of the cliche kind of just screaming and we do this by the book. I don't know. Just,
yeah, they just took the time to give him a couple extra lines each scene and hire a really good actor to portray him. I mean, that's really all you need for these side characters. You don't need to put much into them, but things like that make all the difference in the world in a movie, I think. You have any more positives before we move into dislikes?
I think I've talked about most of the things that I just really like about it. I just think it's a pretty well done movie with a really cool art style. It had a really good cast, and I think I would honestly like it even more had I seen it like when it first came out, because I think especially at the time, it's a lot more unique than it is having seen it for the first time now.
Yeah, I think the late 90s, early 2000s is an interesting time for films, because reading the reviews, they almost always focus on the effects and rarely even tackle the story. Even Ebert does it in a lot of his reviews of the time period. It's weird. And so I think films like this, they either praise or bemoan the effects in the reviews and don't actually deal with the storytelling and the cinematography and whatnot. And so I think that was a weird time for blockbusters like this.
Yeah, it's almost like the birth of kind of modern action movies, I think.
Yeah, it is very modern looking.
It is an interesting time. And I remember because I didn't see it when it first came out, and it was kind of before I was really into like movies and keeping up with, you know, what everybody was saying about movies and things. So I wasn't really aware of what kind of criticisms were being aimed at it. So I just ended up kind of like skimming through a lot of the reviews that were posted on Rotten Tomatoes, and I just couldn't help but think, like, man, these guys really got caught up on CGI.
Yeah.
Not really talking about the movie.
Yeah, it seems now that it's become so prevalent that nowadays it's not mentioned unless it's really bad or really good. I think that's a much more healthy place as far as just like general film craft, that you're not just only looking at that when you can actually see past it and look at the story. All right, let's move into some of the dislikes. My first one, I'm kind of hesitant to mention it because I don't want to appear in league with a mindless crowd of Shia haters out there, but I have no idea why Shia LaBeouf is in this movie. His character really adds nothing to the story, and he's part of the one action beat that I kind of dislike, where he goes and does the stupid stunt on the motorcycle and pulls out the two pistols. It feels like it's from a different film, and Shia's character has no point or purpose, so I kind of wish they had cut him out.
Yeah, I don't like that action scene at all. I think I watched it by myself, and I'm pretty sure I said out loud, "Oh, you were doing so good." As soon as he went up the ramp, I'm like, okay, maybe this will still be cool. And then whenever he jumped off and pulled out the two pistols, I was like, this is even more over the top than like John Woo. This is crazy. I agree. Like, Shia LaBeouf added nothing to the movie. His character didn't tell you anything else about the world. You don't even know. They with the first scene, they almost act like there's some sort of connection between him and Spooner. Mm-hmm. But they don't really say what that is.
Yeah.
And I mean, I to be honest, like, I actually liked a lot of Shia's dialogue. I think
he plays his character well. Thing
is actually funny. Like, the way he's just some kid. He reminded me like of kids whenever they first learn how to cuss, and that's all they want to do because it thinks it makes them cool.
Yeah.
Will Smith saying like, "Stop cussing, you're not good at it." Like, he had some really good dialogue, I think. But to me, if that character was in the movie like he is, like, they should have had him do a little bit more. Because then even at the end when he goes off to rescue him, it's like, I get it that you know that guy, but there's literally hundreds of people running around, and you seem somewhat okay to just sit on your motorcycle. But then when you saw him, you're like, oh, I gotta do this.
Yeah, I think, I guess it was to give us a man on the ground with the big showdown between citizens and robots. But I don't know. His character is given more screen time than it's worth, I think. And this was definitely, I think, his audition for Sam Witwicky from the Transformers films, because it's basically the same character.
Yeah, pretty much. I actually really do like Shia LaBeouf as an actor.
I think he's good. I mean, he commits to that role with everything he has, and he goes for it. I mean, the character's annoying as hell, but he's still, I think he does well with it.
Yeah, so I do. I love the Shia LaBeouf of that time period, because that's like before he went crazy. And even though I think some of his better roles, like in terms of dramatic, like him in Lawless was, I think, really great. Nobody really talks about that role.
Yeah.
But I also like, this was almost, based on the looks, it looks like this was still, was Even Stevens still going on during this time? Because it looked around the same age, and that's almost my favorite.
I don't even know what that is.
No, it's. Is that the old Disney show he used to be in, and it was pretty much the greatest performances you'll ever see from Shia LaBeouf.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, enough about Shia. Do you have any dislikes you want to talk about?
This one isn't even really a dislike. It was just something I kind of noticed. But apparently Will Smith's character is the only police officer who is not under, like, dress code regulations. Because In the police headquarters, everyone is walking around with like your typical like police uniform, and he's walking around with like that long coat and the beanie, and he is the only person there who's dressed like that. So
yeah,
I'm not sure if he gets a special pass because he's Will Smith and he's cool.
Yeah, he's just too cool for dress code, man.
Not really a dislike, just something I noticed.
Yeah, I did notice that too, but I don't know. It's just funny, I think. And some of the green screen, I think, is pretty dated, especially in the warehouse scene where they were running between the rows of robots. It looks pretty bad. And a couple shots here and there just look kind of wonky. But none of that's mostly nitpicking on my part.
Maybe there were a couple shots in the scene where the robot like tears through the mansion.
Oh, yeah.
For the most part, I actually think that movie or that particular scene looks pretty good, especially within like 2004. But there were a couple of shots where, and maybe that whole scene just looked really good, and the couple of shots that I thought looked kind of bad were just more par for the course for that era.
Uh-huh.
But there were a couple of shots where I'm like, even for 2004, this seems a little bit weird. But then again, I don't really remember what movies typically looked like in 2004, so maybe that was just kind of what it usually looked like, and all the other scenes that I thought looked really good were really good even for the time.
Yeah, I think Proyas, very smartly, he cuts fast enough and keeps the camera moving enough to where even the bad CGI shots, they go by so fast. And it's not like the stupid quick cut shaky cam we see nowadays. It's very effective, but I think he knows how to handle the camera just well enough to where the bad CGI doesn't just like stick out in your face.
Yeah, there was never, even at its worst, there was never a time where the CGI was just there for like prolonged periods of time.
And one final, like, this isn't even a dislike, it's just kind of a weird thing that happens. Why does Spooner go to Calvin's house after the demolition? He's only met her technically once, and he just kind of shows up on her doorstep randomly. It seems kind of weird. It feels like there was like a deleted scene in between there where they got to know each other a little better. Did that feel weird to you?
Not until now. Yeah, I didn't really think about it, but I mean, maybe it's just because I knew that she was going to be one of the lead protagonists. So I'm like, oh, naturally, Will Smith's going to go over there. Like, these are our two protagonists. But I guess I didn't think about the fact that he doesn't really. Well, that was the only time he had met her, right? Was at the robotic headquarters. So I guess it would be weird for the fact that.
They had gone on the weird adventure to the factory together, but still, it seems kind of weird to show up on a girl's doorstep in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I actually really like that scene. I think there's a lot of funny and dramatic stuff in it. Like, you were the dumbest, dumb person I've ever met.
Yeah.
Do you have any more dislikes?
This is another one where it's like, I don't really want to call it a dislike, but maybe I would have liked for the ending to have gone on a little longer. Like, I think the idea of having the last shot be what Sonny drew, like, that's cool visually, but it doesn't really tell you what's happening going forward. Like, it seemed like the idea was that because that figure was like the savior of the robots in his dream, that he is becoming like the savior of all of these robots, but it doesn't really tell you how. And maybe that was a point, maybe it's kind of like up to like just what you want to think of it, but I don't know, I wasn't really clear on where that meant that like society and robots were headed in the future. Like, are they decommissioning robots because of that event, or, you know, I'm not really sure what's happening after that.
Yeah, it seemed like they were kind of trying to set him up as some kind of messiah figure that would lead all these useless decommissioned robots into artificial intelligence and humanity or something, but it doesn't really go anywhere. I think it's intriguing, but I wish they had done a little bit more.
Yeah, like I don't want to use the word like cop out, because I don't really think it was a cop out, but it seemed like he was trying to like do a really cool ending, like this, like, oh, he is, like you said, like he's become this messiah figure, but then it's easy to say that and then not have to elaborate on it. Like, we don't really get it. Okay, well, what is he doing? Like, is it like you said, like, is he leading them to like AI self-awareness? Does that mean, like, does that make what all the humans were doing at that part pointless? Because it looked like they were putting him back into the storage. So is he showing up and saying, like, no, get him back out? Like, I don't know. But like I said, I feel like that, whether that's a actual criticism, may be like dependent on if I could just sit down and talk to Alex Proyas and see what he was getting at. And if he said, you know, I don't know, I would have been like, okay, that's a criticism. That's a dumb answer. But if he were to say, well, what I was getting at, and like give me a good answer, I'd be like, oh, okay, I can actually see that now.
Yeah, just for a half second, it seemed that the film was trying to be a little smarter than it was or something. I think it works fine. There's enough setup to where it means something, but I just have no idea what it means.
Yeah.
And there's another positive I forgot to mention. I really, really like the scene where she comes to his apartment and they reveal that how he got his robot arm and the backstory of why he hates robots. I think that's a really powerful emotional scene. And I think it plays through the goofiness of having him shirtless for no reason. I think they play it pretty well.
Yeah. I like that scene a lot too. I think it was mainly because they could have just kind of gone with a robot killed my father or something, like some sort of like really cliche reason, like the go-to reason if you're trying to get somebody to hate a specific like demographic or whatever. And so the idea that it wasn't because like he didn't do it, but it was because in his mind, like robots can't make the decisions that humans can. Like I really like the line where he said she had an 11% chance of surviving. Any human would know that that is more than enough to try for it. And I was like, that, okay. I became sold on his distrust and dislike. Like, it was a really smart way to do it.
Yeah, that line, I was just going to highlight it. How he acts with that line, just, I think that entire scene's really well written, but that's a very powerful scene. And I think, and it doesn't just come out of nowhere. It's set up because you see he has the flashbacks in his dreams like two or three times before that, and then you see that he has a robot arm, and then it leads to that scene. It doesn't just come out of nowhere. It's set up really well.
Yeah, it wasn't just kind of this, here you go, this is why, this is where you get the answer. It's like it feels like an actual payoff to certain beats in the story beforehand.
All right. Do you have anything you want to mention before we move into our closing thoughts?
Not really. I would just say that to anybody who's listening to this, who is like me, that just kind of overlooked this whenever it first came out, it's worth watching. Like, don't let the 58% on Rotten Tomatoes scare you away. I think it's a really good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just, as far as big, dumb, fun sci-fi action films go, this is one, I mean, sure, it has dumb parts, but it's actually a very smart, well-written, well-told, well-acted story. And I think it's definitely Alex Proyas's best film. I think he doesn't bite off more than he can chew on this one, like he does in a lot of other films. And I just think it's a well-told story. It has some really creative, exciting action scenes. I mean, I really don't have any big problems with it as far as sci-fi action films go.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably one of the better ones. I'm really glad I ended up liking it. So, now that we've pretty much talked about everything we want to say about this movie, next week we are going to be doing Pirates of the Caribbean 2, Dead Man's Chest. This is actually a very unpopular opinion of mine. This is actually my favorite in the series.
Wow.
There's a lot of things I want to say about this movie. So I'm excited to talk about that one.
Interesting. I haven't seen Stranger Tides, and I don't really plan to. And I more or less enjoy all the Pirates films. I love the first one, but the second and third, I am very, very mixed on. So I am interested to hear what you have to say on that one.
Well, I look forward to it. This may be the most different episodes of ours then, where there's more of a disagreement, but I think it might be fun.
Yeah, I think it definitely will be. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on, whether it's good or bad. We'll see. I haven't seen it in a while, so I look forward to a rewatch. Yeah, if you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes and give us a rating and review. That's how people find us and just kind of get us out there in the world. Also, you can like us on Facebook. We are Underrated Podcast, and our website is underratedpodcast.com. And I'm Gabriel Green on Facebook. Feel free to send me a friend request or interact with us there. We try to get back to everyone who comments.
If you want to contact us through email, you can email us. We're theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com. So if you have any questions, recommendations, or really anything you want to let us know, feel free to email us. You can also follow us on Twitter at underrated_pod. And then I am also on Facebook as James Hamrick. If you want to add me and talk about movies, I would love to do that. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. Maybe go back and rewatch the movie if you have seen it and you maybe didn't like it. Maybe you would end up liking it more this time. And then if you haven't seen it, it's definitely one worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it for this episode. We will see you next week with Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest.
See ya.
Do you feel that dark abyss? All your deeds laid bare? All your sins punished? I can offer you an escape.
Don't listen to him!
Do you not fear death?
I'll take my chances, sir.
To the depths.
Life is cruel. Why should the afterlife be any different? I offer you a choice. Join my crew. And postpone the judgment. 100 years before the mast. Will ye serve?
I will serve.
You are neither dead nor dying. What is your purpose here?
Jack Sparrow sent me to settle his debt.
What is your purpose here?
Jack Sparrow sent me to settle his debt.
Did he now? I'm sorely tempted to accept that offer.